Welcome to the fourth episode of Pints of Football. We are still your hosts, Ayushya and Himanshu. And on this week's episode, we'll discuss the Champions League draw.
So we have Real Madrid versus Chelsea. We have Man City versus Bayern. All four teams, these great teams in one bracket. Then we have Benfica versus Inter and Milan versus Napoli. And so we'll have this one Italian team, not named Juventus, in the semi-final for the first time in a long time. So that's something to look forward to.
And three Italian teams in the quarterfinals for the first time since 2006, Himanshu. After all, they are not the Farmers League. But before we dive in into the Champions League quarterfinal fixtures, let's go through the main events of the week that has gone by. Starting with, where else but Arsenal getting knocked out at home by Sporting Lisbon in front of their home fans in the round of 16 of the Europa League.
I mean, it was an amazing game for me to watch, right? Just seeing Arsenal being defeated to Sporting Lisbon when they were like outright favourites, especially at home. And that goal, we have to speak about that goal.
I mean, until now, the quintessential image of the half-line goal was the one scored by David Beckham. But what Pedro did this weekend, in a crunch game, in the 60th minute, away from home, in a must-win game, this is surely now, he's the poster child now of the half-line goal. And it just felt so good to see a fool made out of Aaron Ramsdale. He's so cocky, and just seeing that flushed and drained face gave me so much joy on a Thursday late night.
Yeah, I think Ramsdale got a hand on every single penalty that was there, right? And he still couldn't get that. He couldn't get a save, and it was very, very surprising. And then Gabriel Martinelli. It always pains me to see a youngster missing a penalty, but that's kind of where it ended. Very happy to see Saka converted, but then I guess Martinelli will have a little bit of that pressure going into the next few matches.
Just one last question. Do you think this has any impact on the mentality of Arsenal in the title race?
I actually, in fact, think this is a good thing. Now that their focus is entirely on the Premier League, their season to lose, honestly.
Okay, moving on. Next, we have to talk about Newcastle winning one of their two games in hand. 2-1 victory. The race for the top four just got heated up.
I think we were discussing about their striking problems, and I feel like Alexander Isak could be an answer to them. He was brilliant. He had a finish which was, I think he had to improvise in the last second to kind of get that in off that cross. And the penalty was very good against like Keylor Navas, who's like a very good reputed keeper, right, for penalties. So that's good. That's going well for Newcastle. I'm a little bit sad because they're catching up to United. But yeah, it remains to be seen if both of our predictions about the top four can be, proven wrong by Newcastle.
Moving on, we have yet another sacking in the Premier League. On last week's episode, we mentioned that Crystal Palace, the 12th place team in the Premier League, are also in the relegation battle. And it seems like their owner Steve Parish agrees with us. He ended up sacking Patrick Vieira after 1.5 seasons in charge.
I think these mid-table teams have always that conundrum. Do they go for that exciting, piece of football, exciting manager, which Crystal Palace did with Vieira, right? They thought Vieira would bring in a little bit of whatever he learned under Wenger and a little bit of experience he had from Nice. Didn't work out. They sacked him. And there's rumours that Hodgson will take over. So it's basically back to square one. Hodgson will be pragmatic. They'll go for a more defensive-minded lineup, defensive-minded play, which I don't think is what Crystal Palace need to do, because they've been in the Premier League for so long. I mean, they have to move on from being in the relegation battle year after year.
And it's very difficult to analyse Vieira's performance this season. Sure, the season has not been great, but over the past couple of games, he got draws at home against United, Liverpool and Newcastle. He has been playing teams above Crystal Palace in the Premier League for the past 10 games in a row. So I think it's really difficult to say whether the sacking was right or not.
It's a second season curse, right? I mean, he did so well last season. We really thought he'd kick off. He got results against City, I think United as well. So we were thinking that this is something like Crystal Palace finally taking that next step forward. It just didn't happen. You know, the second season is very difficult for them to kind of, really understand what's going wrong and take that next step. And somewhere I think they've just caught in a rut, right?
But a quick word on Vieira. We still think he's a good manager, right?
I don't think so. Maybe it's a personal bias of having seen him face United for so many years. I don't really rate him that way.
I definitely think he's better than the whole class of ex-player managers that Manchester United has produced.
I would agree with that. The managers we have produced from the class of 92 and onwards has been terrible. So better than those group of people. But yeah, Vieira is...
But I personally like Vieira, and I like to see him get another chance with another team where there are some resources and maybe a better squad. Best of luck wherever he goes. Best of luck, Patrick Vieira.
Moving on to the next topic. While, you know, the men's game couldn't get away from the influence of Saudi, the oil money, right, coming into Newcastle and making them what they are today. The women's football, however, has taken, has put their foot down against the influence of Saudi Arabia. Are you sure?
So, this has to be the most bizarre thing ever. FIFA's grand idea of scaling up the FIFA Women's World Cup involved a sponsorship by Visit Saudi. I mean, clearly another attempt by another oil-rich state of doing like sports washing and trying to paint a rosy picture, but the women's game stood up to it. The whole protest began with the football associations of Australia and New Zealand, who were completely against Saudi Arabia being the sponsor of the women's game, considering the condition of women in the country itself. FIFA initially resisted, but various other countries banded together, and finally, this past week, FIFA confirmed that Visit Saudi will no longer be a partner of the women's game. And just to be sure, while it's a victory that Visit Saudi is no longer associated with the World Cup, the statement from FIFA was not that they have listened to the protest or the member associations. The wording released was that they failed to reach an agreement with Visit Saudi. I still don't understand, Himanshu, why the world's most popular game to further grow has to rely on money from these states who have sketchy human rights records and possibly can corrupt the game in a major, major way.
I mean, they obviously had to draw a line on women's football. It's like, for example, a Tesla kind of sponsoring a fuel-guzzling, you know, competition like the NASCAR, or like a Modi, I don't know, sponsoring Licious, right? It just doesn't make sense. These two just don't get along. So I feel like Visit Saudi sponsoring women's football just didn't make sense. I'm glad people went against it.
Modi sponsoring Licious has to be the funniest thing I've heard year.
That's the Bobo moment of the week.
That's a Bobo moment of the week for this year.
Himanshu mentioning Modi sponsoring Licious.
That's it. We have covered all the major events over the past week, at least according to us. And now we can finally move to the main topic of the week, the Champions League quarterfinals. Himanshu, broadly looking at this draw, what is the main theme according to you?
Yeah, I think it was a big surprise having these three Italian teams, especially with not having Juventus in this trio, right? And they haven't even spent much. The Italian league itself hasn't spent that much. So a big surprise for me, honestly.
And some of them have not had an easy path to the quarterfinals. It's not like they've had the luck of the draw. Inter had to get out of a group of Bayern Munich and Barcelona. AC Milan still had to beat Chelsea, Salzburg. And then Napoli had to get out of group of Liverpool, Ajax and Rangers. So it's not like the luck of the draw has favored them. And again, even in the round of 16, a team like AC Milan, which was not doing well in the domestic league, still had to beat Tottenham. So, yeah, I mean, they've truly beaten expectations along the way. Some of them have had really tight games, and then there have been teams like Napoli, again, a closeted Napoli fan, Himanshu. But then there have been teams like Napoli who also just plundered their way and like just been so impressive all along. So you're right, Himanshu. Truly, I think that's the main theme.
But
or
do
the
you
standard
see that,
moment of the quarters.
Do you see it's something like a trend? Do you think the Italian League, it's a comeback for the Italian League? Maybe next season we'll have an Italian team winning the Champions League, if not this season?
I don't think it's a sustainable comeback by the Serie A. And the pure and simple reason is none of these clubs are financially in a very, very good position.
Exactly.
So they have somehow been able to grow players, or they have been able to get players from outside at low prices. And you know what happens, right? The moment you grow these talents and you become a standout team one season, the next season you are raided by the biggest club in Europe. It happened to Ajax 2-3 years back. It is actually consistently happening to Serie A.
You're seeing the rumors already with Osimhen and, you know, Kvaratskhelia probably moving on next season.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think this is something which is going to be there in the long run. But yeah, it's a great story. And again, that's why we love the Champions League, right? Every year, we just want some of those surprises. Also, shout out to Benfica. They've been here before, but still, they are another story.
Having lost their star player, Enzo Fernandez, to Chelsea.
And so, Darwin Nunez.
I wouldn't call him much of a star, but yeah.
He scored twice against United, so he is a star.
You said you will not mention the 7-0 drubbing, so this is...
Okay, I won't digress anymore. Moving on, Himanshu. Who do you think has the easiest fixture? Who would be the happiest with the draw? How much of an amazing form Napoli are in, and Inter would have been glad to avoid AC Milan simply to avoid the pressures of a derby. And even for Benfica, they wouldn't have wanted to face any of the remaining six teams, right?
I think Benfica are, but on a more of a free scoring run. They scored many goals in their domestic league as well as the Champions League. The last one, I think they won 5-1 against Club Brugge. But that's something against Inter. Inter haven't been scoring freely despite having two very dominant strikers, at least on paper, with Lautaro Martinez and Apna Lukaku.
Dominant and Lukaku, oh my god.
So that I feel like maybe Benfica have a little bit of an edge, but yeah, they'll probably be glad they're not facing Napoli or a Real Madrid.
Okay, and finally, which team do you think has had the toughest draw?
I think this would have to be Chelsea. I don't think any team would be happy to face Real Madrid in the Champions League.
I won't argue much more with you over there. And it's not only about Real Madrid. Even if somehow Chelsea could get past against Real Madrid, you still have to get past the winner of Manchester City or Bayern Munich in the semi-finals. So, I mean, Chelsea are like, they are between the frying pan and the hot fire. I mean, want to win now and then get knocked out in the semis and feel angst later. Or
just get it done now
and like end exactly. All expectations from the season. I won't contest you. Moving on from, let's dive straight into the games, right? The first game and easily the biggest fixture of the quarterfinal draws. Teams, most of us would agree, are the favorites to win this tournament outside of Real Madrid. Manchester City versus Bayern Munich. Himanshu, what do you think about Bayern's run in the competition so far?
I think Bayern have had pretty much, you know how they have in Mortal Kombat when they have this flawless game?
Yeah,
it's pretty much what Bayern Munich have done in the Champions League this time. They've been phenomenal. Going against PSG, the front three of PSG, Mbappe, Neymar to some extent, wherever he was available, and Messi, and not having conceded a single goal. It's supremely impressive.
And again, they're the only team in this competition who have not even drawn a single game. Bayern have won our extremely tricky games. They beat Barca twice. So it's not like they've gotten there by playing easy teams. They are a tried and tested team in Europe this season, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, I think the only thing which is not going so well for them this season is just the fact the German Bundesliga has become so competitive, right? But beyond that, Champions League have been flawless. I just don't see... It's unfortunate that they're kind of meeting Man City so early on.
I know.
This would be an ideal final for me.
Yeah, definitely. On top of that, Bayern have also really coped well. They lost Lewandowski at the beginning of the season. They bought in Sadio Mane. Mane has been injured, but still the goals have kept on coming, right? Even in the Champions League, there have been so many different sources of goals for them. Choupo-Moting has been a surprise. Sané has been scoring goals. Goretzka has been scoring goals. All along that, they have so much quality in Musiala, Alphonso Davies, Joshua Kimmich. I mean, this team is full of match winners. Even at goal, right? They're still coping with the loss of Manuel Neuer. And they're still doing very, very well at it. So, this is truly a very, very lethal team. And Himanshu, what really distinguishes them from Bayern teams of the past is, in the Champions League, they've not won all games by dominating possession. They've been perfectly comfortable with being pushed back in certain games and playing on the counter. As we saw against PSG, we saw against Barcelona. So there is some resilience which is built into this team.
Exactly. They're very adaptive. They won't stick to that one method of play, which is not the same thing that we could say for a Man City under Pep.
Definitely. And they've also been extremely clinical, right? They've been outperforming their XG also. So again, very, very strong team, and it feels that everything is coming together for them at the business end of the season, right? Who do you think are the key players in this tie from Bayern Munich side?
I think Bayern Munich will have to, despite of maybe not so much in terms of goal contribution, I think it'll be Joshua Kimmich. He just brings in so much leadership into the midfield. He's also so adaptive. He can play in literally any position on the field, in my opinion. Great player. I'd love to have him at United. He is their key player. I think with him missing, even if you have like a very good striker and Choupo-Moting up front, right? It doesn't really make a difference. He kind of leads the team by example. So for me, it's Joshua Kimmich.
And Mane is coming back from injury. He's already started playing games. So if he is up and firing by the time the quarters roll around, Mane has caused a lot of damage to Man City over the years. So I think it will be a huge, huge boost for Bayern. Moving on to City. You and I are ardent watchers of the Premier League. So we can't praise City enough. They seem extremely scary on paper. They obliterated RB Leipzig 7-0. They have the cyborg in Erling Haaland. City also, like Bayern, have not lost a single game in the Champions League this season. They've conceded only 3 goals in the league this season. And contrary to what people might believe, they're not so Haaland dependent when it comes to goal scorers, right? Mahrez is a goal scorer. Kevin De Bruyne is a goal scorer. So what do you make of City's form coming into the quarterfinals of the Champions League?
I think City's league form we're very well aware of, right? It's been pretty consistent, except a couple of matches where they've lost, where Arsenal have kind of, you know, gotten ahead. But Champions League has been, I think, would say pretty much perfect. They've also beaten a German team very recently, which would, I think, play very well since they're playing Bayern. But what they come up against is Julian Nagelsmann. He's extremely clever. He knows exactly what a team will do. I remember facing when United faced RB Leipzig, right, when Nagelsmann used to manage them. We beat them 5-0 at home. Then he understood exactly what we do, which is very basically counter-attacking football, right? He understood that, and he kind of, you know, got his tactics so good in the next, in the return fixture, where we were beaten 3-2. I think it was 3-1 or 3-2, but it was the critical fixture where they went through instead of us. So Nagelsmann is a very clever tactician. It's a very good matchup, and I'm seeing a Nagelsmann against Pep Guardiola.
I think apart from the brilliance of Haaland, two key areas where City really need to focus on, firstly is Kevin De Bruyne, because he is not in form in the same way that we usually expect him to be. And secondly, is the fact that City are short of men in the defense, right? With Cancelo out and with Stones and Laporte being injury prone, they really cannot afford any injuries to the defenders against this lightning quick Bayern Munich team, right?
Yep. Having said that, again, I feel Guardiola is, you know, he can kind of manage all these injuries with very like-minded players to sub in for them, right? So I just feel, even though these names are big misses, I feel...
But do you think the age and lack of experience of some of these Manchester City defenders at the big stage will be a problem? For example, Akanji, Ake, or even Rico Lewis, sometimes he's now having to start games. These are all very, very young players who do not necessarily have the experience of playing at such a big stage and shouldering the responsibilities as first team starters.
Yeah, definitely. I think I agree with that. Also, it's, I think, City's entire mission this campaign. They got Haaland for that. Even Haaland in his recent interview said they already know how to win the Premier League, right? They have to win the Champions League, and hence they bought Haaland. So there's so much of pressure for them to win this one tournament. So yeah, I think that's going to be there on their shoulders.
And there's so many interesting battles. I mean, there are stories just purely amazing on paper, like Mane coming back, Cancelo coming back, Sané coming back to face City, Haaland going up against Bayern Munich again after losing domestic competition after competition after competition to Bayern Munich. But between these two stalwarts, these two giants of European football, where do you think the game will be won and lost?
This is a very difficult match to call, to be honest. As you rightly said, City's defense, there are a few injury prone players there. And I've seen how they kind of stuttered against United with their counter-attack, right? And if Bayern use that tactic, I feel like they'll be very susceptible to that.
I agree with you on that part. And as we mentioned, when we were talking about Bayern Munich, they can play on the counter. And we have seen United and Liverpool be successful against City with that particular strategy. At the same time, Bayern can come and straight away press a team like they did against PSG in the second half, in the second leg. So City really have to be very, very cautious, let's say, in the way they are in this game, and they have to move the ball around quickly. I don't think Bayern Munich will give them the luxury to pass the ball in a leisurely pace from side to side,
as they used to in the Premier League, right?
Yeah,
you're right. I think that's where, and I think the first fixture is at home for City. It'll do them very well to get maybe a 2-0, 3-0 lead and then go into Allianz Arena and you know, like, hope that Bayern don't sit back. If Bayern sit back in the Allianz Arena with a lead, with even a slender lead at the Etihad Stadium, I think it's very much game over for City.
Another key area which has been the theme of all City matches this season is, can they bring Erling Haaland into the game? A lot of their success will depend on this, right? As to whether they can integrate Haaland into this game.
I think, yeah, I mean, the only way Haaland isn't brought into the game, where kind of, I think United and a couple of other teams have used his tactics.
He scored a hat-trick against United.
No, I'm talking about the home fixture. Anyway,
selective
is basically blocking off the channels where De Bruyne or, you know, Bernardo Silva run in. So if Bayern Munich can manage that, and I think they have a very clever manager who might be able to manage that, then I think there's no way in for Haaland.
So you are going ahead with Bayern Munich in this game. What's your prediction?
I think it all depends on the first fixture. I think if City go with a lead to the Allianz Arena, I think they have a very good chance. If for any reason City don't have a lead in the first fixture, I think Bayern will kind of sit back and play them on the counter and destroy them in the reverse fixture.
If City have any injuries in defense, then I think Bayern are knocking them out of this competition. There is no doubt. But if a fit Manchester City team goes into the quarterfinals, they will qualify. And the reason I believe is, I still don't think this Bayern team is as good a pressing unit as the teams of the past. And with this Manchester City team, if you allow them to dictate the pace of the game, it's going to be a whole different affair. Because it's not, we saw PSG create some problems against Bayern Munich, where the long ball over the top was working, where PSG was able to boss the game. They had more possession in both the games, and PSG is a much slower team than Manchester City. So if City are allowed to keep the ball, if Bayern decide to play with a low block, I think City will be able to pickpocket that defense. And over two legs, I think that Haaland question will be answered. And that's where I believe where Manchester City will be able to edge out the game. Moving on from the battle of the titans of European football to the Italian derby, Napoli versus AC Milan. Right off the bat, Imam, should you think Napoli are the most informed team in Europe at this standpoint?
You're right. Napoli have been brilliant this season, in very good form. Up front, they have Osimhen, who's scoring goals every other game. They have Kvaratskhelia providing those assists. In defense, they have Kim Min-jae, who's been in absolutely brilliant from bringing the ball up front. They also have, by the way, Ndombele from Spurs. I mean, he's going to definitely win the Serie A this time, and maybe even the Champions League. So they've really been a thing to watch this season.
And they didn't necessarily have an easy group. They had Liverpool in their group. Ajax could have been a tricky fixture for them in spite of the raid by Manchester United on the Ajax squad.
All fair.
And Rangers, they were back in the Champions League after a long time, so it could have been tricky. And they got out of that group with 5 wins. They scored 20-odd goals. And unlike the Serie A, where Osimhen and Kvaratskhelia have been leading the charge, they've also have other goal scorers in the Champions League. Raspadori has been among the goals. Zielinski has been among the goals. So you're right, they're a very strong, a solid team. And again, a team which does not necessarily play football in one way. They can play games when they have less of the ball. If they have to dictate the game with more possession, they're able to do that. So they really are a extremely tricky team. And now they're facing AC Milan. And frankly, for AC Milan, this is such an important Champions League campaign, because they are European royalty at the end of the day. And for the longest time, for the past decade or so, they have not been here at this stage. So for the club as a whole, it's something big to have another quarterfinal at the San Siro in the iconic red and black colours. And AC Milan might be one of those teams where we say the luck of the draw has favoured them. They were not exactly in a tricky group, because they were with Chelsea, Dinamo Zagreb and RB Salzburg. They did have a tricky round of 16 game against Tottenham. And Imam, so I don't know how to analyse that game. On one hand, they did take care of Tottenham. They conceded very few chances over the two legs and they knocked out Spurs. They kept a clean sheet across 180 minutes. But on the other hand, they also managed to score only a single goal.
It's the history of the Tottenham.
So, how do we read AC Milan coming into this game?
I just don't see AC Milan going through here, right? They've just been like, Napoli have dominated the league. AC Milan have struggled to keep number 4 position. I don't think they'll actually maintain it, right? I think apna Mourinho and Roma will get that position. They're just... I don't really know... I can't really point a finger at where it's gone wrong for them this season, especially because they're really good last season. I think maybe it's an aging squad. It's a squad that hasn't been refreshed, also because of the money problems the entire league has been facing.
And there have been injuries to some of their key players who have been in and out of the team throughout the season.
So I just don't see, I don't know where the problem is, but I just don't see Milan getting through.
And I know that in Rafael Leao, they have an extremely promising player, but it's not like Leao has been able to set the Champions League on fire. They still seem to be relying on a player I love. I love Olivier Giroud. But still, if you're relying on Giroud solely for an entire season, then there are going to be problems. Again, because of his age, he will not always be 100% fit. But also, it kind of restricts the way in which you play your football. So, yeah, it's going to be extremely tough for Milan to make it past Napoli. What is your final prediction? Do you see it being extremely comfortable for Napoli, or the heritage, the history, the culture, all of that will come into play and be a much tougher and close two legs?
I just don't see that happening. I really think Napoli will get through pretty easily. Just because of Kvaratskhelia and Osimhen, right? The pairing is amazing up front. I don't see Milan having an answer to that.
Benfica versus Inter Milan. And again, Benfica, to me, they are one of the stories of the Champions League this season, simply because of the tough group that they had to get out of. A group involving PSG, Juventus and Maccabi Haifa. They took care of a star-studded PSG team. They drew twice against PSG. They defeated Juventus twice. They didn't lose a single game along the way. And then they absolutely obliterated Club de Bruges in the round of 16. They seem to be a very lethal team. And again, a team with multiple goal scorers who are firing on all cylinders, both domestically and in Europe.
Yeah, different goal scorers. They had Rafa Silva, they had João Mário, they've had the World Cup hat-trick, the guy who kept Ronaldo out of the squad, Gonçalo Ramos, right? They play really well together. It's pretty much like how maybe a United play, if I would compare, right? Rafa Silva takes in these positions both on the right side of the wings as well as, you know, as a number 10. He does very well in these situations, very much like Bruno. Then you had João Mário, who's had very unsuccessful stints at the Premier League, but is doing really well at Benfica. And then Gonçalo Ramos is an up-and-coming striker. He just knows exactly where to be and when to be. He's one of those, you know, number nines. And he does really well. He's converting pretty well as well. And right at the back, in their defense, they have Otamendi. Coming off a great World Cup win, he's growing in confidence. Although he was pretty much an average player for Man City over the years. So all in all, a squad which is built on both experience as well as youth. And I think it's pretty much very balanced.
And they're going against an Inter Milan team, which again did not have an easy draw. They had to get out of a group involving Bayern Munich, Barcelona, and obviously they had a small team in Victoria Plzen. But again, to their credit, they did defeat Barcelona once. Even the second time, they had almost defeated Barcelona except for the last minute equalizer by Robert Lewandowski. Domestically, they haven't been in the same kind of form that they were last season, although they are just 5 points off what they were last season after 26 games. Again, this team, what shows up on that day, you really don't know, because on paper, they are such a fast, quick team, can hit you on the counter again, can boss the game. They can play at a very high intensity. They have a player in Lautaro Martinez who's in amazing form. Edin Dzeko, despite Inter's form in the league this season, is having some of a renaissance season. And then there's always the Lukaku question on the substitutes bench. So what kind of Inter Milan team do you think we'll be seeing in the quarterfinal?
I think they'll probably be very defensive just because how free-flowing the kind of football that Benfica play, right? Maybe it's very different from what Italian teams they face week on week in the Serie A. So they will be very defensive. They'll probably let, you know, Benfica have most of the possession. Most of their creative output will depend on Hakan Çalhanoğlu. I think all of it has been for match to match. And also the lot of overlapping runs that Dumfries does, right? He's been very good for both the national team as well as Inter Milan. A lot of rumours going that he'll probably move to United, having that Dutch connection and the requirement of a right back that we have.
Exactly. Who all are moving to Manchester United?
Yeah, there's a lot of rumours and the Qatari investment coming in, hopefully. So yeah, we'll probably have all of them.
So given the form of these two teams and what we've discussed, how do you see this quarterfinal playing out?
I think I really want a win for football, and by that I mean a win for Benfica. I just don't want teams which sit back and defend and play this pragmatic football to go through. So for that reason, I'd say Benfica.
I think the Benfica story has been great, but Inter will end up doing it. Again, I solely feel that because it's not just that they can sit back, but they can also sit back and deliver. They did the same thing against Porto. They've actually defeated Napoli this season 1-0, playing the same way. And again, they have the players who can produce the goals at the other end. And secondly, I think the San Siro will be an extreme at the other end. But overall, I just think this will be an absolutely cracking fixture. The Inter Ultras, those passionate groups of fans who are known to get rowdy at games. Even the Benfica fan base is extremely passionate. So no matter how this quarterfinal plays out, and it might be, let's say, the least star-studded of all the quarterfinals, but might have the best atmosphere. And moving on to the fourth quarterfinal, and a game I truly dread, Chelsea versus Real Madrid. And the funny thing is, up until 3 years back, Chelsea and Real Madrid had never ever faced each other.
And they sold Hazard and?
And now they are facing each other for the third year in a row. 3 years back, it was Chelsea who knocked out Real Madrid in the semi-finals of the Champions League and route to glory. Last year, after going down 3-1 down at home, Chelsea seemed to be pulling off a miraculous escape at the Bernabeu. They were 3-0 up, and then we had the iconic Madrid comeback where Real scored 2 goals in the last 10 minutes and qualified on aggregate. And here they are again, third year running, in what should be again a cracker of a fixture. Starting with Real Madrid, they had a fairly easy group stage against Leipzig and Celtic. They were extremely professional with or without Benzema. The goals kept coming, they did what they had to do. And then on paper in the round of 16, they seem to have a tough game against Liverpool. You expected Liverpool to show up, giving all the European history and European pedigree. But again, Madrid proved that even when the going gets tough, they're still the masters of playing in this competition. They were 2-0 down in the first leg after 20 minutes. They came back to win that game 5-2. And the second leg, Liverpool never seemed to have a chance. They absolutely dominated that game, dictated the flow of the game, and also ended up winning it 1-0. And extremely professional performance. And the scary thing is, it doesn't feel like they're still playing their best football, right?
Exactly. I mean, they had, even in the groups, when they were in the group stage, right, Real Madrid was doing pretty well in the league. Then the form in the league kind of dropped off, but they still maintained that very scary Champions League form by dispatching Liverpool so professionally. So that was honestly a thing to witness, especially in between these games. I think we had that 7-0 drubbing, so very happy occasion for me. Going into this one though, I think either of two things could happen based on like how you'd see a story, right? You'd either see a Real Madrid dominating the game because of the Champions League pedigree they have, or a Potter doing what Chelsea have done before, a manager taking over mid-season and then winning the Champions League. It's happened twice. Do you see it happening a third time?
I am personally not a superstitious person, but with Chelsea and the Champions League, all my superstitions I start believing in. And I'm glad you mentioned Chelsea because it's been a sort of a tricky Champions League campaign for Chelsea. Frankly, the season has been extremely tricky. But where credit is due, it should be given to Graham Potter. When he came in, Chelsea had lost a game against Dinamo Zagreb. They had drawn against Salzburg. Potter comes in, two back-to-back victories against AC Milan. And then we end up winning the remaining two games. Against Dortmund in the round of 16, we lost the first game 1-0 in Germany. Again, a game where Chelsea missed quite a few chances, but Potter turned it around. An extremely brilliant performance in the second leg, knocking out Dortmund. The league form seems to be picking up. So, while yes, there are a lot of gaps, I feel, in Chelsea's game, they couldn't have expected to go into these a quarterfinal against Madrid in a better run of form, especially given how the season has been progressing.
So Ayush, where do you see the game being won or lost?
I think the game is already lost, but where I think Chelsea, and the reason I'm saying this is because over the past 3 years, I also feel this is the best Real Madrid team. When Chelsea faced Madrid 2 years back, it was a sluggish team. Sergio Ramos, Marcelo, an injured Eden Hazard was playing. You had both Modric and Cruz playing in midfield. The young players, there was not exactly a lot of youth around this Real Madrid team. And even last year, even the team was more mobile, but still players like Camavinga, players like Rodrigo had not been properly embedded into the team. But this year, the Madrid team you see is just seems to be so strong. Camavinga is now a regular starter. Rodrigo is stepping in to play games where Benzema is not available. Modric just seems to be ageless, not even like wine, which gets better with age. He just doesn't age. So I think Chelsea are facing an extremely difficult to beat Real Madrid team. And I think where this game will be won and lost, firstly, is going to be up front. Because Chelsea will get chances to score. I think they will create chances. But one problem has been that we have been extremely wasteful with converting our chances. So I think being clinical is going to be very important, especially considering how clinical Real Madrid are at the other end of the pitch, not only with Benzema, who seems to be so efficient with his touches, right? Every touch he has on the ball seems to have a consequence. There is nowhere where he passes the ball somewhere and you cannot see the exact purpose of that pass. So that definitely is one area. And I think the second area where this game might change for Chelsea is a battle in midfield, because right now this Chelsea midfield seems to be, even in their best game, seems to be very, very high on energy and less proficient in terms of dictating the pace of the game. If you look at players like Kovacic likes to pick up the ball and run. Enzo Hernandez is still a player who again likes to run with the ball. On the other hand, when you look at Madrid, and especially with Modric sitting in that midfield with Camavinga, this is a team which knows how to distribute the ball, when to go long, when to go short. They seem so seasoned in picking up the pace of the game and slowing down the pace of the game. And where this game can, and that's where I think Madrid will run away with this game. The only chance where Chelsea have is probably if N'Golo Kante is fit. He's started training. If he is fit and has a couple of minutes of game time going into this game, maybe him against Modric can be somewhere where Chelsea can plug the gap. But these are the two areas where I think the game will totally turn around.
Yeah, for N'Golo Kante to pick up form, he has, I think, a couple of EPL matches, and with Chelsea turning form, right? So maybe if that 2-3 goals up, maybe they can give him a couple of minutes as well. But yeah, I think also a good player to mention is João Félix. He was largely in my opinion, a very important team in Atletico Madrid whenever they face Real Madrid. But now he has a Potter team which is kind of getting a little bit more confident, will probably play more free-flowing football, which is more suitable to him. So he going up against Real Madrid again will be something for me to watch.
And I think another important battle in this game, which will be fascinating to watch, is going to be between Reece James and Vinicius Jr., right?
I mean, Reece James is fit, will be fit.
He will definitely be fit for this game.
It's three games hence, so you never know.
I'm sure he will be fit. I'm sure he will be relishing this battle. And it will be so good to see, because I think in Vinicius, and what is again brilliant is how Madrid use him. Because what I think Ancelotti will do is, he will always ask Vinicius Jr. to stay on the halfway line, putting pressure on Reece James, asking him the question, if you want to go forward, you risk leaving Vinicius alone. So I think that is how he's going to try to put pressure on Reece James, and how James manages his positioning up and down the pitch, considering he likes to go up front and he has to go up front for Chelsea to be lethal. This will truly, truly be an extremely fascinating battle. And again, on the larger theme of this fixture, and I'm glad again you mentioned Graham Potter, even for him, this has to be such a big moment, right?
Exactly, right. From facing like a Brentford, etc. in the Premier League, to suddenly facing a Real Madrid
in the Champions League quarterfinal.
It's a huge step up for him.
Forget about given how the season was going. When the season began, he was at Brighton, and now he is building a team up, coaching world-class players against such an iconic Real Madrid team, up against Carlo Ancelotti, one of the greatest managers the game has ever seen. For Potter, it will really be amazing to see how personally also he manages the emotions going into this game. It takes a lot to be a truly good cup team. Just seems so unfazed by everything. They still continue to do the things they were doing all along the game, and then something ends up happening for them. It's that mentality, not losing the cool.
Exactly. I mean, in a fun way, when you see like Ancelotti, all he has to do is lift an eyebrow and things just get fixed. And then there's Pep on the other side, you know, scratching his what's left of his head out to just get something done. So it's really the beauty of Real Madrid in this competition. Much like what Man City are for the EFL Mickey Mouse Cup.
And truly, I mean, it's etched into their minds. If they're two goals behind, they just keep it simple. They just keep one thing in mind. We just have to score the next goal. And once we score the next goal, things will happen to us. It's truly amazing the way they play. So, Himanshu, how do you see this quarterfinal playing out?
I unfortunately think this will be the end of a run for Chelsea in this tournament. First fixture is at Bernabeu. I think here, you're right at the question, right? Is Reece James against Vinicius Jr. if Reece James is fit? A very similar thing actually happened when Karim Adeyemi was facing Chelsea and in the Dortmund fixture, right? One of the wing-backs couldn't track back and Enzo Fernandez was overrun by Karim Adeyemi. If that kind of a thing happens with Vinicius Jr., I think Chelsea have no chance. So Ayush, how do you think your club Chelsea would set up in these two games?
This honestly is a very, very tricky question to answer, especially considering the first leg is at the Bernabeu. And the only way Chelsea will qualify is if they walk away from... They cannot walk away from the Bernabeu with a defeat. I just think it's out of the question. And again, if we walk away from the Bernabeu with a defeat by two goals or more, it's definitely over. So in the first game, against what Potter really wants to do, against all of his instincts, I think Chelsea have to set up a bit conservative. Start the game with a low block and feel how Real Madrid are playing. And then start progressing, because Chelsea honestly do have players who can hit on the counter. All of these are extremely quick players. On the right, I think he should start with Pulisic. They're really quick players. Another key factor will be if Karim Benzema is fit for this game or not. If Benzema is not fit, then I think Chelsea can take more liberties, because Madrid will not have that linchpin of a striker who can move up or who can go back and release other players around him.
I think they can learn a lot from how United played Barcelona, right? Very similar to what you said. They kind of stayed back in the first half, saw what Barcelona had to offer. We'll see some kind of a result. If not, maybe a 1-1 draw or a 2-2 draw, which they can bring back to Stamford Bridge and to make a result out of it, like they did with Dortmund.
And again, how they play in the second leg will pretty much be dictated by how the first leg ends. So if Chelsea are alive, I think the theme across both the legs for Chelsea, we have to kind of start both games with a foot on the brake. Not go all out against Madrid off the start. Gauge how they are playing and then slowly ease into the game. Because it's not like Madrid are the most lightning quick or the fastest of teams, but they are definitely a team who can punish you very quickly. So starting the games in a very solid manner is the most crucial thing. And again, staying alive in the first leg, after the first leg, has to be the priority for Chelsea. After this deep dive into all four of these games, Himanshu, let's put our foot down. Let's put our money where the mouth is, where our word is. Let's start with the predictions. Man City or Bayern Munich?
This one's a tough one to call.
I know, we didn't say anything while discussing the game in detail.
I would say because the first game is at the Etihad, I think they'll get a couple of goals. So, and they'll be able to defend that at the Allianz Arena. So, City.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Manchester City. Benfica versus
Inter Milan.
Inter Milan.
For me, I support football. So, for that reason, Benfica.
I am sticking with my Inter Milan choice.
Yeah,
then Napoli versus AC Milan.
Bias of yours coming in. AC Milan and Napoli. What's your...
I think this will be a breeze for Napoli. I really think they will obliterate
Milan in both.
Milan, lines. Especially given their massive lead in the domestic.
And moving on to Real Madrid Chelsea.
I just don't see this happening. So, I mean, it's Real Madrid. I think nobody is going to guess anything else.
So, Madrid and Man City semi-final. We didn't agree on Benfica Inter. We agree on Napoli. So Napoli against whoever wins with Benfica and Inter.
And finally, who do you see going to the finals between Man City and Real Madrid?
This one, I'll have to still stick with Real Madrid. I don't think City have it completely figured out this season. So I think the same, whatever happened last time, will repeat it.
I think if it's a fit Manchester City team, then that cyborg of a striker will obliterate Real Madrid.
It's
and
a lot of ifs, right? I feel like even if Benzema is not playing, I think somehow Real Madrid will make it through.
No, that I agree with you, that no matter what Madrid team reaches, if City have injuries, then they're not going through. But if a fit Manchester City team faces a fit Real Madrid team also, I just think this time it's Manchester City's year to be in the final. And on the other hand,
then you have a Napoli against an Inter or Benfica, which we couldn't agree on. But would you agree that a Napoli can beat both these teams?
Oh, definitely. I think Inter would still be tricky considering Inter defeated Napoli once earlier in the season. So maybe some of that psychology will be there. And a desire to take revenge given Napoli's dominance in the domestic league. But yeah, I still think Napoli will make it through, and it will be an amazing story for both Osimhen and Kvaratskhelia to sign in the final.
So it'll be a Napoli versus possibly a Real Madrid.
Manchester City final.
that remains to be seen.
So that was our breakdown of the Champions League quarterfinals. Thanks a lot for taking out the time to listening to us. Thanks a lot for sticking with us on this journey. Please continue listening. And please, please, please hit that follow button and spread the word about Pints of Football